Welcome to our podcast.
It's not prod.
I can't.
It's pod.
I think I need a speech language pathologist right about now.
Let's try that one again.
Hello, SL peeps. Welcome to True Confessions with Lisa and Sarah. Okay, can start confessing now. This is so cheesy.
Well, hi, Lisa.
Oh my gosh, it has been forever.
I was going to say a hot minute, but it's been maybe a year.
Oh, close to a year since we've recorded a podcast because, you know, life,
yeah,
business.
Normally we take the summer off. And then, so we usually record, what, September to May?
Yeah.
And then we actually, what's ironic is we did that last podcast in May talking about like our struggles and how hard things have been and like needing a break and going through some things. And then we didn't come back.
So people, actually, I just saw an email. And if you are listening to this, I still have not replied. Maybe I will by the time this is post. But there was an email that came in that I just saw the subject line. Are you ever going to record True Confessions again? And I was thinking, oh my gosh, it's just the universe pushing us forward.
We need to do it.
Into doing it.
Yes. So we took a brief hiatus, but we are back.
And we're back with quite an awesome guest.
Yes. Do you want to introduce who is in the confessional today?
I do. I'd like to use his really formal name.
Yes, me too. I love it.
Soon to be Dr.
Yes.
William Bolden the Third.
Yes.
Woo! Welcome. Otherwise known as Bill. And we are thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. I didn't tell you the middle name. It's Walter, William Walter.
Oh, okay.
It's denoted now.
It's even better.
Doesn't it sound even more regal?
Yes. It is. Seriously, every time I introduce you, I'm like, I know we're on a first name basis of Bill, but I just think it's such a great name.
Oh, thank you. It is a nice name. I could say, it's one of those ones I have to remind myself it's mine. Like, oh, that's right. My name.
Yes. Like, I am so smart.
Yes.
Yes. I should use it. It would be better.
So we first met you, I'm using quotes, but nobody can see me right now. Yeah. I don't know why I'm using them. When we did Telecon, which was right at the height of the pandemic. It just had kicked off. Everybody was sent home.
And freaking out.
Required to do teletherapy. Yeah. No one had an idea how to do it. And we were able to pull together a conference within, 2 weeks? The fastest of all time.
Yeah, and even had some pushback because we wanted to get it registered with ASHA. And at first they said no. And I was like, that's fine. We're still going to hold it. But just know you'll probably get a little feedback on why we couldn't make an exception to getting these registered with ASHA.
This is an emergency.
So they did make the exception.
They did. And we were able to host it. And you did one of the courses. Mm-hmm. And besides the fact that we just love you and your energy and your personality and everything else, you do such a brilliant job of like making things so simple and step by step. I think everybody was like, okay, I got this.
Well, that's really nice to hear. I felt like I had the presentation from something else. I had put it together, and it was funny. It was decently attended. I think maybe 20 people came, not very many people. And it was funny, the conference I actually did it for the next year, they're like, oh, we saw your Telecon thing. You should do something like that. And I'm like, I did
last year. So
it was kind of funny, like, you know, people really weren't super, super interested, but I had it laying around and it was kind of an hour and a half thing. So it was nice to hear the positive feedback because I was kind of sweating like, oh gosh, is this going to fit in an hour? And a lot of it was kind of like, you'll have to figure out the like true step-by-step.
Right.
Here are some ideas. And as I'm sure you know, people want to see. They want to see like, and then I clicked here and then I moved this here. And so I was really pleased that it was well received. And I don't even remember where I saw a post, maybe.
I couldn't remember how we connected either.
I contacted you. I do remember that because I knew I had it and I knew that you were doing something. And I don't remember because I had gone to the SLP summits. And so I was receiving your emails. And I think maybe I saw an ad, but you didn't have it all maybe together yet. You were just saying it was coming.
That's exactly.
I thought, I have this. It's ready to go. Why don't I just
talk
out there? So that's
where stars aligned. That's so crazy how things like that work out. And like you said, that this way that you show everybody like exactly each little step, that's how, and we're going to get into SLP Summit that we just wrapped up. 12th?
13th.
Oh, geez. I don't even know how that's possible. But same thing. It was another presentation where, and I'm reading through the chat and everything else. And it's like, thank you for like being so explicit and showing us like each, like piece by piece. Not everybody has that.
I feel like you should work for like a university or something.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't even think we actually got into. Did you want to take a minute to kind of tell our audience who you are besides endeared by Sarah and Lisa?
Yeah,
I am nobody. Who are you? I'm going to say that's an Emily Dickinson poem that I always liked. So my name's Bill, obviously, and I am a school-based speech language pathologist. That was kind of my career goal once I graduated. It was not my goal in school, but once I had student taught, I decided I wanted to do school-based therapy. Because I went to Kent State, I kind of was on their listserv. So I knew when there was a job that opened up there for teletherapy, providing school-based services. And I've been doing that for a number of years now. So I work at the university. I provide school-based services. So K through 12, all day, every day. It's the same school. I'm their only SLP. They don't have anybody on site who does services. But over the course of the time there, if you're there, people will find you as a resource and opportunities open. So I've had the opportunity to teach some classes over the years, supervise graduate students. And then I think it was January of 2020 where I had just gotten accepted into their PhD program for speech language pathology. So I've been doing that. I'm getting close to the end, which is exciting, but I could say I love to talk about teletherapy, but I also am really interested in language therapy, especially in just how to get the most out of it and all of those things. So.
Yeah. And I loved the top grammar is one of those topics to me that I feel like I should know more or like it should be a little bit easier for me. And I really struggle with it.
I feel like we know about grammar, the rules of grammar, mm-hmm. and we can clearly delineate if somebody is breaking those rules, so to speak, but we don't know how to teach
it. Yes.
We can say, yep, no, it's this, not this, yes. but like those steps that you broke down even in your course for Summit, it was for anyone that didn't have a chance to catch it. It was all about creating thematic units in order to target grammar.
And so I want to talk a little bit more about that, especially for those who weren't able to catch mm-hmm. that course. But before we do, we have to talk about how you broke Summit. We did our very first out of all of the summits. We always, if you come live, it's twofold why you should come live. One, you get to have a Q&A, an opportunity to ask questions to the presenter, but also the chat is so awesome. And mm-hmm. so you get to talk with people and like share ideas while the course is going on. But then also we always do a giveaway. And so always, we've asked the presenters if they have something they want to give, or we'll just throw out a gift card or something, but it's like your reward for joining us live. Mm-hmm. And never before in history of Summit had we had somebody so generously. Thank you. Generously offer to give everybody in live in attendance this incredible, insane resource that you created. And it was like, that was like a true Oprah moment, by the way. It was like so. It
was in the moment. Until then, we started getting the feedback once the replays were coming that the people who did not catch it live were not feeling loved. I don't know how else to put it. I think what was fascinating for me is like we all came from this lens of, wow, usually only like two or three people, one to three, depending on what the resource is, one to three people might get access to this prize. And you gave it to how many thousands were thousands. Alive? Yeah, there were thousands of alive.
It was over 2,000 people downloaded it.
Amazing.
It was the coolest thing ever. So insanely generous of you, like I already said. And so, I understand like there's some disappointment when you find out that you missed that opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I I guess it's kind of like, do you see the cup half full? Do you see it half empty? And I feel like if you get the resource, it's really easy to see things half full. And if you don't get it, right, it's easy to see it as half empty and to be like, oh, that stinks. And I think maybe the other thing too, that maybe was confusing for people who didn't actually get the resource. I think it was easy to say, think like, well, when you go to teacher pay teacher, a lot of times people have if you have a store, you have to have at least one free resource. And a lot of times you upload something that's like 10 or less pages. There actually are guidelines on how short they want it to be if it's free, just to kind of show the quality of your work. And I think that because that's maybe the way it was disseminated, and I could just be making all this up, but I think part of it was maybe people thought, oh, it was like a freebie that was just going to be, that was free anyways. And that really wasn't how it was supposed to be intended. It was just, that was just the way that we got it out to people. And it was a fully formed like thing that you would normally give away. It wasn't just like
42 page.
Yeah. It was like 50 pages.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was 53 pages. But, you know, it wasn't like a little like 3-page thing that was like, here's a list of books that you might use in therapy. Right. And I don't, that might've been some of the confusion too. But yeah, it definitely opened up. It was an interesting conversation in terms of, you know, like who gets what and, you know, how that works. And also I thought it was interesting too, in terms of how many people were like, well, I can just email it to you. And like the terms of use of things of on teacher pay teacher, things like that.
I thought about that. I didn't see that specifically, because I wasn't going through every comment. So yeah. I didn't see that, but that is interesting that I don't think people understand. There is a term. I mean, like how many hours of work would you say you put into create that, just roughly to create that one resource?
It probably took at least 8 hours.
Yeah.
But at this point though, I knew kind of what I was doing. I had a framework for it. It was definitely a full day off sitting down and doing it. And then it went through edits, and I always had people look at it just to kind of see, you know, people will look at it with fresh eyes and be like, well, this doesn't make sense to me. Or, you know, like maybe there's a better verb for that page or whatever it might be, or, you made a typo, or that's always a huge one. Like you called them Kimmy here, but you're calling them Teresa here. Like that's not the same name. And so I usually have some people that I am that are SLPs that I know pretty well. They'll look over and just kind of give me a sense of their feedback. So I would say at least a full 8 hours, probably more than that, but I would feel comfortable standing by. It took at least 8 hours to get it all.
Well, I think the difference that, you know, so like when people share that, you are not, it's such a, hello, we've all shared resources yes. at some point or the other.
We are
it's
all
almost like if I go to Target and they forget to scan an item, I don't feel bad. It's Target. It's a corporation. It's, you know, all this. I think when it comes to individuals, though, it's a totally different, this is probably a horrible ethical comparison, but in my brain. Say,
I feel like, so shoplifting from the absolutely. I would, okay, but shoplifting from a business.
Well, Lisa Kaufman wouldn't do that, but Kisa Lachman every now and then that might happen to Kisa Lachman.
I know what you're trying to say.
No, but I guess it does feel different. It's like when there is a giant corporation versus an individual who, you know, puts in so much time and it is your baby that yeah. every product you make is from your heart, your soul, your mind, your experience. But I think where it kind of came to a head in the chat too, is then you had people that were like, I will buy it. Yes. I want to buy it.
Yeah.
So, can you talk maybe to,
but before you say that, I did like talking about people's response to it is yeah. I don't know why anything surprises me after 13 summits, because we get the gamut, but 98% are the most lovely, grateful attendees. Like they are so freaking thrilled for the opportunity to be at Summit and all the knowledge they're learning and everything else. But there's just always these a few. And so there were some people who were super angry and like disappointed and like, well, can I email him? Can I? And we're like, no.
Right.
We made it real clear who
they
it was.
Found me anyways.
Yes.
I joke, I got calls on my work phone.
They found you? Oh my gosh.
Wait, they literally called your work phone?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. People found
me.
Say, it's okay. Honestly, it's okay. And, you know, people honestly were very gracious, and I've tried to respond to everybody. See, I'm going to have a Lisa moment. Like if I haven't responded to you, because I just haven't gotten to it, but, people have been very gracious. And I get it. Like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like when you teach a course, like you want to be so accommodating and you want to be like, I understand life happens and things happen, but then I'm also, it's also funny too, because I'm like, it's a nice resource. Right. But it's not a mate. It's not like the end all be all. And it's funny too, because when I did the course, the whole point of the course was supposed to be like, here's how you can make your own.
Right. You do it. How to create one.
Yeah. It was interesting, but it's okay. Like I said, you know, I was more than anything, I was flattered that people thought it was that nice. Like, I just was kind of like, oh, I'll give this away at the end. And, you know, I made it for this. So it'll be nice to do that.
Well, as a gold star SLP that has only worked in the schools, that is where I think that they are not used to people giving them things. I know that's Sarah and I worked in the schools, you exclusively. I've dabbled in a couple of other areas, but like, I always felt like resources for me, where I lived in California and Arizona, it was coming out of my pocket. So I think anytime mm-hmm. somebody gets anything, and even to have like the fully formed example, mm-hmm. is probably why they felt like they wanted it too. It's like, okay, I heard about it. I know how to make it, but then mm-hmm. I've got this, like, yeah, this is exactly how it looks that I can mm-hmm. see it all put together kind of holistically. So,
yeah. And like you had, I mean, we had a lot of people were like, no, I'll just buy it. How do I buy it? Like, yeah, they were ready to do it. Yeah. And we had talked about before you even went live, like, is there other things on this, you know, on your TPT site that people are going to be able to download, or like, you know, this is going to get a lot of attention to your store. Yeah. And you were like, no, I'm not selling anything right now.
Yes.
I want it to be about that.
Yes. And so you're like, and the update is.
And are we changing our mind?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I am really looking at it just because. So part of the reason I stopped was just, you know, some of the tax law was changing. And I was like, I don't want to sell anything if I haven't really read it. And you know, it's like, where do you find the time to be like, I'm going to go sift through that. So that was part of it. And it was right when there was a big shift. This was several years ago. And it's funny too, to say this, but like, the store never did well. Like, I mean, it was like nobody was coming. The people who proofed the products were like my best customers. So they would come and they'd be like, I bought this. And I had a colleague that she would do like giveaways with the newsletter that she had, and she really liked them. And so she would give them away. And it would always be a really good day when I'd get, you know, like she bought five of them. Truth be told, I mean, they were it was not that successful of a venture. And so what I needed obviously was a wonderful presentation to propel them into the stratosphere. And I won't lie. Part of the other reason too, I didn't want to necessarily sell it and I wanted to give it for free, is because one of the things I think is so nice about the conference or the SAP Summit is that it is free. And it's, you know, it feels like we live in this world so much of where it's like, did you like that? It'll be $20.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, continuing education costs money, like having, you know, them keep track of it costs money. Paying for all your licenses costs money, paying for all your materials costs money. And so I always felt a sense of, not that it was wrong, but just a sense of like, I want to make sure that if I do presentations that I'm not being like, the emphasis isn't just like, and at the end you will buy my product.
Yes. To me, it's always a fine balance though, because I think Sarah and I have obviously had this conversation also having a software, but also really our presentations are about the processes that you need to get a process together to do X, Y, and Z. If you want to use software, we've created that piece, but you don't need the software to do it.
I think you've done a wonderful job with that. I've been to several of yours over the years, and I obviously went to your keynote. And I think you guys have done a really good job of that. You know, keeping that balance of, I have created something. I should be paid for my time, right? You know, it's when you put that much work and love and effort into something, it shouldn't be free. And like, that's the other part of it too. Is, you know, with this resource too that I had given away, it's like, I gave it away free to so many people.
Right.
You know, I shouldn't say this here, but I guess it's true confessions, right?
Right.
Originally, the plan was I was going to make it free for everybody. And then the people who were proofing it were like, this is kind of nice. Like, are you sure you want to do that? Like that's going to be a lot of people. They're like, you should check with the people and see how many people are usually coming to these conferences. And I know, obviously, the telecon, I think, was like way more than average. And then when we spoke about it, I was like, okay, yeah, like this is like, you know, that's, we're talking thousands of
thousands. People.
It was, I got numbers today. We actually had a Bright Ideas meeting today, and our engineer said there were about between 16 and 18,000 people who attended. So that's bigger. We just went to ASHA in New Orleans in November, and they had 9,500 people. So just to give some context to how many eyes get on the courses, that is, you know, that's quite a significant number. And then what we talked about too is that early on in Summit, we used to be really vocal about if you come live, you get something will be given away. You'll be eligible for a giveaway. But I don't know if we've done that. I think we kind of just like think about our repeat audience. So I think we're going to, our lesson learned on that end is being the provider of the
market, the benefits of coming
to
live.
Market those benefits, including the ability to give, or that they will be eligible for giveaways.
Yeah.
Well, and also it's a free CEU. That's the giveaway.
That's the giveaway. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
It's, I feel like typically the ones that I've watched are always really practical. You know, they're not super theoretical. You know, they're things that hope, you know, I feel like most of the ones I've been to over the years, like you can leave with something and say, okay, I'm going to try to do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, you know, if all else fails, remember the value. And it was a free CEU.
Exactly.
You
know? Right. But I, going back to what you were saying about the feeling like it's a, you get this free course and then now buy my, you know, hate that. I've taken so many online courses that have done that where I'm like, oh my gosh, what, you just gave me this teaser just to get me in here to lure me in to buy this product. And so, you know, that is always something I've totally struggled with. So I understand exactly where you're coming from on not wanting to give that appearance of that. But it, I think that's the key, is these courses in and of themselves are not, they're not a teaser. They might be a little more introductory and they're only an hour, but there was a wealth of knowledge given.
Yeah.
Like we said you went step by step on how somebody can do this themselves. And then it was just this added bonus of, and here I've already done it. So I'm going to, you know, as a thank you for being here, I'm going to give this to you. So I don't know. I'm really torn because again, you cannot continue. You have no time to make these resources for free. And there's no way. And then again, you're creating a solution to a problem. I'd rather buy it from you.
Yeah. I really have been thinking about it. Like I know people probably think that's just like a thing that I'm just saying. And it just, it's also too, it's time, you know, like you don't want to just like slap it up there. You want to make sure that it's, you know, the directions are really good. You know, when you're giving away something for free, you're like, there's a typo.
Right. Exactly. Right.
But you know, when it's for sale and, you know, like, and all those things. And I shouldn't say this here too, but it's like, you know, I do have a little art, kind of a little library of things. I think there's like probably 20 or 30 things that I created that I used to sell. But I don't know. I really do have to think about it. And then it's also finding the time, and time is fleeting these days, but
I know.
Another thing too, though, about presentations, and then we can morph into something else. But I will say too, and we were just talking about this before the podcast started a little bit, this idea of, you know, like a little bit of like that imposter syndrome, a little bit of that like idea that like, you know, when I do my presentations and like, you know, you're giving these resources, it's one thing to be like, it's free, but it's another, when people pay for it, then there is that kind of idea in the back of your head, like, is this good enough? You know, that people are going to love and, you know, and they're going to feel like they got their money's worth. Like that's, I mean, you know, obviously with your guys' platform, like it's like people are getting their money's worth, you know, but with these like little resources, I don't know, you definitely do think about that as well. Like that's.
Oh, we do to this day. Oh, there's not a day that goes by that I go, don't think, who the hell do I think I am? Like, why are people trusting us that this is, you know what I mean? Like, the pressure is insane. Mm-hmm. I know. You have to push past that because I think especially with everybody needing, you know, like, again, these solutions to real problems that they're struggling with on a daily basis.
I think that's the difference. It's a solution. And so I don't like the courses. I think I can think of some of the individuals, even I don't even meet in our field, but people that give you that teaser to just sell. It's like an infomercial for their products. Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like, you know, I think of like even Nina and Scott from Stuttering Therapy Resources. They're fantastic presenters. They work in the schools and they sell their books. So why is that okay? And why is it not okay because we have software, not okay for you because you have TPT products? Like that's, I think, where we've kind of wrapped our head around is that we always want to make sure our presentations hold value, stand alone. Absolutely. But I don't want to be embarrassed about the solution that we created because we have been at that point where either we didn't even know where to start or I didn't have time. Like I don't have the time right now to create it. You put in the time. I want to compensate you for the time that you've done on a TPT material, or even I don't think in our case, people understand that how much software costs to develop, maintain all of that. Like it's, if we could give it away for free, wonderful.
Yeah.
I just don't see how that's, you know,
this podcast was not supposed to turn into this idea, but it's a conversation I actually am glad we're having because we get a lot of feedback, you know, even on our own presentations, we've had people come up to us and in fact, somebody not very nicely told us, you know, that they were really disappointed and it was the worst presentation they'd ever been to because it was a big sales pitch. And I was like, we offered every resource that we spoke free on that link.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is what it is. And people are going to feel that way. And I get it. Especially again, like we work so hard and it's not like our compensation is all that great. And we buy so much of our own things. I get all of it. But I'm glad we're having this conversation because there's some definite boundaries that need to happen and you need to be ethical.
And I think it's too, one of those things too, where it's like, you look at other people and I do it and I'm like, well, of course they're selling their books are wonderful. Or, oh, of course they're selling their materials. They have this wonderful vast, you know, I think it's always going to be one of those things where like, other people, you're like, well, of course, because they're so legitimate. Yeah. And then you look at yourself and you're like, but not really.
Yes.
I'm still figuring stuff out. Like they got the answers. And so but
the legitimacy too, I think partly is when you are a publisher, there is a different legitimacy. I think, I don't know if it's our field. I don't know if it comes from Asha. I don't know where it's stemming from, but like publishing is cool. Unless it's TPT. Because that's a different venue. Because anybody could just do that, which they don't understand. The work, like anybody could put materials up. It doesn't mean that they're well done, well thought out, well designed, and all of that. So that's where I think that imposter syndrome comes in, where you're like, well, crap, I did just put it up, but we believe in you, Doctor. Oh, almost Doctor William Walter Bolden the third.
Yes. What is his name? His name is something with a B.
Threw me off.
Well, thank you very much. But to answer that question, no, yeah, I am. I am thinking about it, like I said, and I do think I have some nice resources. But again, it's one of those things of I do need to look at them all, and they probably need a little revamping too. They probably need a little, you know. Things are better now. So the clip art's better. That, you know, I know more about them to be like, you know what? I've been using it and that doesn't work as well as I thought it was going to.
Yes.
And it's funny, even just doing that presentation sparked ideas in my mind that were like, oh, you know what? Like, wouldn't it be cool if there was this extra activity or like, ooh, we didn't talk about this. And so, it's funny because I always think back to like when I had graduate students, like they'd be like, I'm going to go look for this. And I'd always be like, remember, no matter where you look, you have to like have a real discerning eye, you know, whether it's published, whether it's something that somebody created, like as a therapist, I'm like, you know, there's all types. And also there's all types that like, it's fine. It's a good resource, but it's not the one you needed. And I think that's part of it too.
And you have to use your clinical lens on that. Absolutely. Yeah. I do. Let's talk a little bit about, because, you know, of course, I expected them in the chat. Of course, we got some comments sometimes about, I wish I had time to do this. Like you laid it out so perfectly. If this is how you do this, here's all of the pieces. But, you know, like, obviously it takes time. But so let's talk a little bit about the thematic units. Kind of tell us a little bit, in case they missed it, about what's included in it. And then how can we do this? Like,
sure.
Especially after we've been working all day.
So with a thematic unit, the idea is supposed to be that you've created these grammar activities to teach and practice a specific skill while keeping some kind of thematic unity to it. So like maybe it's got the winter theme, or maybe it's like all based on a book and the book becomes the theme. And when I used to create units that would do that, I would always either create my own story, and I called those my grammar units, or I would create my story units where I would pick a book where I felt like it had enough repetition in it of the target, and I would use that, and I would just create grammar activities based off that. Obviously, that's a little easier because you don't have to write the story. The hard part with that was that you don't have control. So, you know, in the book that you love and you really want to use, maybe they don't have as many past tense verbs as you want, or regular past tense, or like irregular plurals. If you're going to try to create a unit on that, like, what book in the world has enough in it that's still a story, that's still interesting, that isn't just a book about irregular plurals? And so what you do is you then create this little story. And for those who attended, that you see that it's not like an amazing story. It just has some kind of a plot to it, right? Some problem to be solved by some character somewhere. And it just is really repetitive. And it's supposed to be. It's that repetitive nature that by the third or the fourth page, you can start, you know, kind of pausing and waiting a second, and the child might even be jumping in with the right word. So, you know, like, oh, that's right. Yesterday, he or she, and they're like, jumped, because they can see that's what's in the picture. Doesn't always happen, but sometimes it does. And you can create kind of that opportunity. Then once you're done with your little story you've created, then you create little activities, hopefully that keep the same theme. So if you pick the seasons, it's really easy. Or if you pick a holiday, it's really easy because you can find clip art for that. And there's wonderful free clip art. I know I referenced my favorite clip art person. Her name's Carrie Bolt. It's K-A-R-I and then Bolt as in B-O-L-T. Maybe I like it because Bolt, Bolden, I don't know. No, I just think she has like the best clip art. I just think it's really cute. I think it's really well done. And she does have some free clip art, but she's got wonderful units. And I don't think it's that expensive if you're going to just be like me and have a library that you use over and over again. And so then you just create little activities. And that's the hard part. I will say the hardest part is sitting down and being like, okay, well, what are we going to do to practice this? And so sometimes it's a memory match game. And sometimes it's like a little worksheet activity. That's kind of where I usually think more about like, what are those discrete skill activities that are really decontextualized, but, you know, they help me teach, they help me practice. Why don't I just take that kind of format and then turn it into something that's now relating back to the theme? So even though it is more like drill and it's not as contextualized, it's still tying back to the theme. The words are still the words that we were seeing in the story. And then honestly, for the last part where we kind of put it all back together, I usually just like take the child's name and just slap it in the story, right? Maybe we put the child's picture over the girl's face and it's like, it's a story about them now. Or they get to make up the names for the kids. You know, it doesn't have to be this wildly different story. It's just different enough that they can put the skill into action. And so that's kind of what the unit is. And I'm sure as I'm talking about it, people are already like, that sounds like a lot of time. And there is no way around it. It does take time. And Lisa actually was the one who had the really good idea. She's like, do it in pairs. Like, be like, I'm going to write the story. Here are the words I'm going to use. You make kind of the discrete skill, like practice activities, the little part activities that go with it. Or like I said, maybe you just write the story for now. And you use it. That's how it all started, was I was just writing these little stories that I would be able to use. And then I was like, well, I can create activities that go with my little stories. And then we can, you know, go back and retell it at the end. It doesn't have to be something that you do all at once. And it doesn't have to be beautiful. The kids don't care. Like, you can have the most basic clip art. I've had some that I spent forever on and they look so gorgeous. And then I have ones where it's just like a little girl with like a bike and there's no background. There's nothing pretty about it. There's no colored page, right? I don't have, you know, little boxes outlining everything. They don't care, right? The image is what they need to see to help kind of give them a sense of what maybe the target might be, whether it's she or whether it's a past tense verb or an auxiliary verb or whatever it might be. And so that's all they need.
Well, and as SLPs, I do think you're hitting on one of our pain points as individuals where we do say, oh, I want to do this. And I want to do it with all of my kids on all of these skills. And then I get overwhelmed by that bigness of that idea. And then I shut down and I don't do it. Mm-hmm. And so we always talk about, like, it's funny, even before we hopped on with you, Sarah's like, oh crap, I can't find the microphone. I'm like, it's okay. The product, us sitting down with you and having this conversation, maybe the audio is not flawless, but I think it's going to be pretty okay.
Yeah.
But we've got to kind of get out of our own way.
Yep.
And just get started. And I do think that's even when we were creating our assessments and stuff, it was, let's start with something that's easier, mm-hmm. something really concrete. And then as you get the ball rolling, you see how possible and easy it is. And then you tackle the challenges.
And also, it's like all goes back to like selling materials and things like that. You know, that was really daunting for me at the beginning too. If I was going to sell it, like, okay, well, then it's got to be perfect. It's got to be beautiful, because look at some of the beautiful things people are putting out. Mine's not that pretty. Mine's not that fancy. I'm not using all of the computer things. And I'm sure people look at mine and they're like, oh, mine's not that pretty. Mine's not that fancy. And every time I look at something I buy off of there, you know, and I have my favorite sellers, doesn't hold a candle to theirs. You know what I mean? It's all relative. And right. The other thing too, that I do caution people about, or, you know, want to remind them of, is how often do you buy something and you're like, this is really good, but I'm changing this because I don't like the way they did it. Or you use it for a while and then you're like, there's a better way to use it. That's the beauty. It's like, it's not about creating a beautiful, perfect product right at the beginning. It's about creating something that you can use in therapy and then tailor and make changes to and be like, you know what? This isn't the best prompt for this. You know, like the story says to say this, but I think we should say this. Or I found that kids need more practice. We need more discrete activities. Or this activity seemed like it was going to go really well. The kids don't like it. They think it's really boring. It's too abstract or it's too complex for them. And, you know, that's part of it too, is like, you know, just looking at an activity and think, oh, I created this beautiful thing. Sometimes you don't want to put all the effort into making it beautiful right away. You just need to get the idea out there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not about the material. It's about the idea of what you're doing. So again, I'm contextualizing it. I'm thinking about the theme that's going to tie it all together. So that way we're not just doing, you know, a drill of past tense verbs, but there's like a reason why we're doing it. We're doing it so we can tell this winter story. But again, I've never had children say to me, oh, this is not very pretty. Oh, this is not very nice. And they've seen them, you know, in all states of undoneness.
Like, who made this? Your little brother?
This is terrible. It's embarrassing. And then they rip the paper up.
Yeah, like, this is awful. Why are you sharing that? No, it's funny.
I love the story thing. So I'm a huge literacy-based therapy person.
Yeah.
We've talked about it on here. Because again, one, you can take a book, you can target anything, and mm-hmm. you can run that thing for 3 weeks. It's mm-hmm. like greatest thing. Plus, like you said, it's contextual, and they mm-hmm. need to have, you know, narratives and literature to be successful in school mm-hmm. and all those things. I love it all. But what I think I took away from that was that you're creating the story for control to target and for specifically for grammar. Like articulation, I can pretty much find enough samples of a sound in any book off the shelf. But it's not the same. Whenever you pull that book off the shelf and you're like trying so hard to find those examples you need enough examples of for that, mm-hmm. You know, to get that, repeatable. What am I trying
repetition.
To say? Thank you. That was the coolest thing to see. And they were, like you said, they were simple stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Effective.
But that is the best way to teach grammar. And I never had thought about it before. I used a lot of I remember using a lot of picture scenes.
Yes.
To try to elicit the whatever target I was trying to get. But it was always, I had a hard time trying to figure out how to get the kid to say what I wanted to.
Yeah.
With just that. So anyway, I loved the story idea.
It works well. I mean, and I don't want people to think like, it's like a cycles approach. Like if you do those, like you're not going to spend 4 weeks doing the unit and then be like, and now they are like it's all fixed, like they're using past tense verbs. But, you know, you can come back to it later. And it can also just be, again, that foundation of, I now know I've really taught this skill. So now later on, that can be part of my prompting is referring back. And maybe I just pull up some little pieces of that unit to be like, remember this?
Well, not just taught it, but taught it. I was queen of teaching in decontextualized ways, grammar. Let me get these flashcards. Let me get this, whatever materials I had on hand. So you're to be able to bounce back and forth between, yes, I can see we need some drill. So now I'm going to go to this activity. We're going to drill, 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 drill. Now I can jump back into this contextualized story to see if they're able to apply it. And if like, I just think it gives you so much more data. And then hopefully since they're seeing that application into a story, then they're going into the classroom and able to start making those connections too. That's the beauty of that is, again, not that it's the most beautiful thing ever, but that it's, you know, really the beautiful thing is that you're teaching the skill in a meaningful way.
Well, and let's talk, you talked about the cycles approach to this, which whenever I think of cycles, I think of phonological processes and how we target those.
So I think it really took off.
And then the other thing I was looking in the chat and Q&A before we met to do this, and it was about the contrasting. That was another one where people went, oh my gosh, like an aha moment. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about those two things?
Okay. So, the first thing that you just said was, pardon?
Cycling. Yes. Okay.
Sorry, because I'm like, literally, I was like, it was here and it left. So the cycles, actually, I learned about that in graduate school. My instructor, who is my PhD supervisor now, Dr. Stu Grogan Johnson, shout out to her. She's wonderful. And I remember her bringing in the article. I remember her bringing in like these really simple materials and kind of being like, this is how it could look. I just want you to be aware of it. It's just an idea for these children who have all these, you know, tons of grammatical errors. And you're kind of like, well, where do we start? Do we just pick one and focus on it for a year or two until it's remediated? And then by that point, you know, it's even, they've, you know, the skill is even more ingrained. The errors of this other grammatical target's even more ingrained. And so it's harder to, you know, get them to do something different. And so that was an idea that always stayed with me. And then, she was a big part of when I started creating these units. I really went to her a lot and would say like, okay, well, like I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And she kind of had said like, you know, oh, remember grammar cycling? Like you could do that. So it's just this idea where it's like phonological target cycling, where you pick a target, you target it intensively for a short period of time. Then you move on to the next one. You're not teaching it till mastery. You're teaching it, you're giving lots of practice, you're moving on to the next one, and then you'll cycle back. And so by doing that, you can target a lot of skills. And hopefully, you know, kind of like a phonological system, right? Knowledge of one thing kind of leads to knowledge of another, right? If I'm paying attention more to verbs and I'm learning more about that, you know, soft d sound at the end, maybe I'm going to be a little bit more likely to pay attention to that, like in third person singular verbs. And so, and even if not, right, I can continue to prompt for those things and be like, oh, well, remember we learned about pronouns, he, she, and they. So now that we're doing this book that's maybe about have and has, I'm still going to be prompting you because you already learned about that one thing. And so that's really what grammar cycling is all about. It's again, it's not really an idea I hear a lot about. Mm-hmm. It's not my idea. It's Cleave and Fay. It's an article from 1997. And I think it's called Grammar Cycling. I can look that up for you.
Yeah, I can attach that as a resource.
I know it was in the references of my presentation, but I can look that up. The other question you asked about was
contrasting.
I think the cycling too, what's super cool is that would be great for if you're trying to push into classrooms.
Yeah.
Too. Like how great would that be if you're working with like your kindergarten teacher or their early self-contained kind of classroom settings to model that kind of teaching is really awesome.
Yeah. And we can, I'll bookmark that. We'll come back to that in a second. But contrastive modeling essentially is you are contrasting the form that you want with another form. So for example, if you're doing like teaching the pronouns she he and they, it makes sense that you're going to put it in a sentence with her, him, and, you know, them, or his, hers, and theirs. You're going to create a sentence that has both so they can see the role of both to better understand, right? Like, because we've all had that, right? Where we're like, it's not her, it's she, say she. And then all of a sudden the kids are like, oh, she has she mom. And you're like,
like the overcorrection.
I wanted you to do that one. Right. So, you know, with contrastive modeling, right, we're showing that there's a place for the other one, but this is where this one's place is and how it's used. So, you know, with the past tense verbs, I think we, you know, it's like, she's snowboarding now, but he already snowboarded. And, you know, having a visual of that, I think, is really helpful for kids. But yeah, it's a very effective technique. And the other one we talked about was the observational modeling. And I usually create a little story that has to do with the theme. However, I always think it's important, if you can, to try to make that interactive, like they're finding the things, right, as you say them and really emphasize the target. But I like to do that a lot, though. Like every so often, I like to just pull up like a really detailed picture scene and just have them listen as I model it. And I'm like, look at all the crazy, weird things happening in this picture. Like, I think highlights used to do that, where they'd have like, you know, like, look, she's eating with a toothbrush instead of a fork. And you know, highlight those. And another thing I liked to do with grammar, so, you know, I'm thinking like, I'm going like, oh, it's kind of fun, which I don't feel like we do very often, is I like to do questioning. And so like when we would work on like is and are, can we make is and are questions? And it would be so much fun. And it's a more complex skill. So it's kind of almost like that complexity approach for phonology, but with grammar, where it's like, well, what's the most complex way to use an is or are verb? Use it in a question. Is she doing that? Because how many kids say like, she is doing that? You know, and so we would practice those, and it's really fun because you get to, you know, talk about all the crazy things like, is that toast flying? And we always practice as a group, right? We have to be the good answers. Yes, it is. Yes, the toast is flying. Yeah. Yes, yep. We practice reaffirming that they are not crazy and they saw it. The book note I made, kind of, or, you know, the bookmarked thing I was thinking about, was you were talking about going into classes. And years ago, what I would do is I would take a book like Goldilocks. And so like you get all those kids from kindergarten screening and they're like, they got the pronouns. Maybe they're missing the auxiliaries or they're missing like the possessive S. And Goldilocks was always a good book to pick because it had the pronouns, it had the possessives, it had, you know, the possessive pronouns. And so we could really use that for a long time. It had like interesting vocab, at least the version I used to choose, because there's like a million versions of that story out there. And so we would just create, we would do like a mini unit where it's like we would come, there'd be like four of us, we would read the story. Then we would do one of those little small drill kind of activities, but with the characters from the story. And so we would practice she, him, his, all those words. She wants her baby bear. He wants his basket. She wants her bed. And then we would do like a memory match thing where we would practice. And this one was a little less explicit, like this is the rule, because I was hoping that these kids maybe just needed a little exposure. You know, they just needed a little bit of practice and push in the right direction. But we would talk about the rule. It just wouldn't, we wouldn't spend like four activities on one skill. We would do it intensively for one activity, one session. Next session, we're going to reference back to that skill, but we would pick a different thing. We would talk about the vocabulary. We would practice telling the story together as a group. And then we would practice all telling it at the end. And I had little sheets I would create where I could really quickly mark off like, okay, so they're using some of the words, or, you know, they have all the story elements, or they're using correct pronouns, or I heard a possessive S where I didn't hear one before. And that was a lot of fun. And it was a very similar idea. The only difference was, and I think the difference between having a book unit and having a grammar unit is the grammar unit's all about one target. All your activities go back to one. With the book unit, it's, the books are so rich, you just can't help but be like, well, I want to do the vocabulary. I want to do the story retell. I want to do all the other things. Those ones, again, you don't get as much teaching practice at each target. But again, if you've done your little mini units already, then it's a really nice way to make it even more meaningful in a real story written by somebody who can write good stories.
That's what I was thinking, is because yeah. I think we're so busy, especially for those of us in the schools where we've got large groups and mm-hmm. everybody's got different goals. Mm-hmm. We're always trying to get the most out of that 20, 30 minute session by targeting mm-hmm. as many things as possible, that we mm-hmm. skip the teaching step, the yeah. really explicit teaching step. And so I think that was the thing too, where you were pointing out is you can't miss that part. Like no. you've got to introduce this very, in a very direct, clear way mm-hmm. and then carry over into those other things. So yeah, one session, you might be kind of targeting just past tense ED for one student. The other three don't need it, as explicitly, but they could help, trying to help the other student who's struggling with that skill, or there's something. You're not wasting their time.
No. I think it's when you look at all of those different goals, one of the kids may have articulation. So what you're supporting with that student, even though he's supporting with the grammar, you're listening for the sounds with him, or WH questions. That's the beauty of any group activities. Yeah. You just have to know their goals, and you have to guide them into using their language or speech how you need them to use it.
And I think we talked a little bit about that. I will say that is why I try to group people based on their goals more than I try to group them based on just like who their teacher is, because I did find that it was harder. And I was like, why am I getting the most out of this time? However, like you were saying, I do think you have to remember at the end of the day, like, what's the goal? The goal is clear communication. So as long as everyone's talking about the book, right, is the person with the sounds using good, clear sounds to talk about it? Is the person who has the vocabulary goal, right? Are they using good vocabulary, right? Just as long as everybody can engage and talk about that story.
Social language needs. Is he turn taking? Is he waiting? Yeah. Is he interrupting?
Absolutely. So I think it can be really, really beneficial. And then I always like to say, if in doubt, go to the wordless story. You'll have so much control. You'll get to do whatever you want. And I have a whole little library of, I was just telling one of the students today, I'm like, we're going to write a book. And it was funny how immediately it went from like, I don't like you, I don't like doing this, to, huh,
this is fun.
That could be interesting. Can I see the pictures of the book we're going to write? Immediately piques their interest. And especially when you say maybe we'll read it to somebody and it'll be your book that you're presenting to them. Then it's like,
so you're using a published wordless picture book and then having the child create a story around it.
Yeah. Okay. And I love to, and I do that a lot with, I do it a lot with my younger children. They think it's a lot of fun. And I think that's where people typically live with that. And I know I talked about this in my presentation, but I like to do it with older students. I don't feel in any way that it diminishes, their skill, or that it's like, oh, it's a kid's book. Why would they? Because I always tell them, who writes children's books? Adults. A child cannot write the words to this book as well as you can.
So good. Right?
So.
Well, and that was my next question is, because I think we did get on both ends of the spectrum, people asking how they could modify mm-hmm. or implement this with either older students or mm-hmm. even EI, very young students. And I do think again, that's the beauty. If you're creating your own stuff, you are in control of what you're doing with that. So
that's kind of how I felt about it. What I think is a really good activity, people might be like, poo, that's awful. I don't want to do that. Which is, again, it goes back to selling things and things like that. People know what they want. And, like I said, I have several authors that I'm like, I love what you do. You and I are on the same wavelength. But, it's hard to find those people. And you feel better about your materials, don't you? Whenever you're like, this is doing exactly what I want it to do. And when you create your own, it does that, and it's easier because you know it so well.
Right.
It's easy for you to make changes in the moment rather than it's like, oh, I bought this yesterday. I'm going to try to use it, but I don't really know it that well to, anticipate those things. It's like when you create your own stuff, you know, you have the skills to make it for EI, you know, and it would work wonderful. I'm pretty sure Grammar Cycling, like in the article, I'm pretty sure they did it with really young children, you know, and you just, maybe the demands aren't as high on them.
Right.
You know, it's a lot more focused stimulation with them. And then with the older students, change up the visuals. Like don't, you know, don't have it be so young and simple, you know, make it a more older, interesting story for them.
I love you again, using the wordless picture books takes away any work from you having to go find interesting clip art.
Just yes.
The book. Yes. There was one. And by the way, that was a question that came up too, is what are your favorite wordless picture books? So if we can get some of those titles from you. I was thinking of one. I think they use it in the ADOS.
Oh, the frog one?
The frog one.
Was it called? Yes. Mercer Mayer.
Yeah. And
he had a series, Mercer Mayer, the guy, I shouldn't say the guy, the man who wrote like the little critter books, you know, like I Was So Mad, Just by Myself, I think is one. He did a series in the 60s. And I think one of them he did with his daughter, but they were all like wordless picture books about frog. Where are you? One Frog Too Many is probably my favorite out of all of those. But those are really wonderful to use. They're very rich, language rich. There used to be an assessment. I don't know if it's still published. It was called like the Strong Narrative Assessment. It's called the SNAP. And it used to use, those. Speaking of the SNAP, Carol Strong, I'm pretty sure she's retired now, but she had a book from like the 90s called like The Magic of Stories for people who are like, you know, like, oh, I don't know what, like they have a hard time like looking at a book and being like, well, what all could I do with this? And I think what's really nice about that book is it goes beyond just being like, well, everything I do is focused solely on like this objective. It really is like, how can you make this a really language rich experience? More so than just like a data collection machine. Like this activity is going to just give me amazing data, which we all love, but also looking at like, you know, they have a vocabulary goal for synonyms and antonyms, but them better understanding pasta, let's say, because pasta is important in the book, is going to help their understanding of the story.
That book changed my life. I cannot believe you can't get it anywhere.
No,
that was the first kind of time I had seen how you could take a story and like
break it down,
not only target so many different things, but have so many different activities. It was so cool. Oh, that's such a great book.
And I'm pretty sure it's out of print now.
Yeah.
But we were talking about wordless books. So the ones are pretty good. There is a series. I want to say his name wrong, but the books are called like The Girl and the Bike, The Boy and the Balloon. Those are a little bit more, they work well for older students because there's a lot of nuance in them. They're very like emotional kind of tales about, you know, longing and wanting things and not getting what you want and then getting what you want. And they're just kind of emotional. And I think sometimes the little kids, like it goes over their head. But you know that like if somebody had written words, it would have been this really rich emotional context. And I think for the older students, they can really put that in, like they can really infer and kind of understand the social context. So those are really nice. Pancakes for Breakfast by Tommy DePola. Is it DePola?
Yeah, I don't know how to say it either, but yeah.
Regenona guy. That one's a really fun one. Let's see. Oh gosh.
I used to take picture sequence cards and they have some that are for older students too, that are, you could see people that are depicted that are older, but I always thought that was interesting too, to see, you know, could you even visually sequence, but then to retell what is the story about? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be a book. It could be shorter if you've got like those sequencing cards that are a little bit more like photograph based or more robust. Those are good too.
But the key is to have enough instances.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And when it's a wordless book, you could make the instances. See, now I'm blanking on all the other good ones. There's a one I think called like Field Trip to the Moon. The Boy in the Book, The Boy in the Book. That's the one I was like, I'm like, there's one I really like. That one's a little bit younger looking. But again, I've never had an older student shy away from writing it. If anything, I think they think it's kind of fun and it's different. But another thing I sometimes do with older students, if we want to practice grammar, is if we're doing like, you know, I mean, any of the targets, he, she, you know, the subjective pronouns, past tenses, you can do peer resolution tasks. And this is actually a really effective strategy for looking at if you want to get like an expository language sample out of an older student. You present them, and this comes from Marilyn Niepold's book on older students, and I think it's like language sampling older students. But it's like where you basically are just like, I'm going to tell you a story. People are always having problems in life, right? And when you get older, you're going to realize people come to you to solve their problems. And they're not easy to solve. And so then you basically present them with a problem where no matter which way you cut it, somebody's not going to be happy. There we go. So there was this guy. We gave away every resource. And right, I'm going to say, some people weren't happy because they didn't get it. No.
This episode's always come full circle every time.
It does. But yes, so but you just have, and you have them like, so you tell it to me, right? So you get that kind of sample and you can practice and you can write it out. Be like, I'm just taking notes because I want to remember what the problem was. And then you look at it and you just say like, oh, like see all these red squiggly lines? Something's wrong here, you know, or you prompt as they're telling it like, ooh, I don't think that's the right word we want there. And then you just, there's like a whole series of questions you can ask them about like, well, why is that the best solution? Or how would you solve it? Or how are they going to feel? Or how did they feel if they did this? You know, and so it can be a really interesting way to practice the grammar as well.
It's so good.
I feel like we're like those dashboard chihuahuas that are just nodding their head back and forth. But I mean, we could talk to you for hours, but I know you have so generously given us an hour.
And we talked about this a little before we went and hit the record button, is you just got off work after seeing kids all day long.
Now you got to talk to us.
And then you got to talk to us for an hour. Oh, geez.
I feel like you get off work and your voice is like, it's like, I had a voice. But it's like cracky and strange.
Yeah, I hope that your husband does not want to talk to you.
You're like, no.
I could say, well, he usually works out of town and he'll actually be coming home here. And I told him, I said, do not come home before 5:30.
You're going to have to keep talking tonight.
And I cannot be disturbed.
You just say, tell me about your trip.
Yeah.
And then silence.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill. As always, it is a pleasure to chat with you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's seriously, these episodes, we kind of talked about this at the beginning. They're always like very, they just happen the way they're supposed to happen, but there's all these great takeaways and tidbits, and I know everybody's going to enjoy it. And it's our first one back of this season, which
first
is
first one 2023 too.
I know. So anyway, such a pleasure. Have a great rest of your evening.
You do the same.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.